Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Wednesday, December 26, 2018. Coming up this hour,
Wall Street returns to work with stocks at a 20-month low.
President Trump looks to calm markets with a vote of confidence in his Treasury Secretary.
And the government shutdown enters day five with no immediate end in sight.
There are calls for an investigation after a second migrant child has died in U.S. Border Protection custody in less than a month. I'm Michael Barr. More coming up.
I'm Rob Buschka. Ahead in sports, the Knicks hosted one of the game's best in a star-studded Christmas Day in the NBA.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak on Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
Good morning, I'm Karen Moscow.
And I'm Nathan Hager. Bloomberg Daybreak brought to you by Sector Spider ETFs. Why buy a single stock when you can invest in the entire sector? Visit SectorSPDRS.com or call 1-866-SECTOR-ETF.
And U.S. stock index futures, Treasury, and gold are gaining as investors wait to see if there'll be more turmoil in markets today. It is 5:01 on Wall Street, and we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures, again, higher, up 16 points. Dow futures up 126, and NASDAQ futures up about 34. All major markets in Europe are closed today. The Nikkei 225 in Japan gained 0.9%. 10-year Treasury up 4/32, yield 2.72%. Yield on the 2-year, 2.54%. NYMEX crude oil up 1.5%, up 65 cents to $43.18 a barrel. COMEX gold up 0.33%, up $4.30 to $12.76.10 an ounce. The euro is at $1.1384 and the yen 110.57. Nathan.
Karen, with the S&P 500 now on the verge of a bear market, President Trump spent Christmas Day working to calm things down, expressing confidence in his Treasury Secretary, the Federal Reserve, and the U.S. economy. Bloomberg's Larry Kofsky reports.
Speaking with reporters in the Oval Office, the president tried to calm the volatility that has smothered the bull market after Bloomberg News reported that he discussed firing Fed Chair Jerome Powell. The president called Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin a very talented guy, very smart person. As for the Fed, he said the central bank is raising interest rates too fast, but he has confidence that the Fed will get it pretty soon. Larry Kofsky, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Larry, thank you. Meanwhile, CNN reports the president's frustration with the Treasury Secretary is growing after Mnuchin's attempts to calm markets failed Monday. CNN said Mnuchin could be in serious jeopardy with President Trump and is, quote, under the gun.
The partial U.S. government shutdown enters day five with no immediate end in sight. Lawmakers and the White House remain at odds over President Trump's demands for a border wall. There appears to be little urgency to come up with a quick resolution. Republican pollster Chris Wilson.
There is near universal support for border security. And so if this becomes about border security, then Trump wins. If Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer make it more about some kind of a, you know, an internal battle between them, or Trump just throwing a fit to get his way, then the president loses. That's kind of where we are in terms of what's going to be considered over the next few days and potentially weeks.
Now, President Trump's been demanding $5 billion for a border wall, while Democratic leaders have proposed $1.3 billion for border security.
Brent crude slipped below $50 a barrel overnight for the first time since July of last year. NYMEX crude is trading around $42 a barrel as worries about U.S. oil supply push against signs that OPEC may extend or deepen cuts in the new year. Alan Nuckman is with Agora Financial.
Every time in the past, they've been able to stabilize prices. I look for that to happen once again, and I think oil's going to have some sort of a rebound, maybe back to the $50, $60 level in the next couple months.
And checking prices now, NYMEX crude oil is up 1.5% at $43.18 a barrel. Brent is up 1% at $50.96.
Today, Wall Street gets back to work with stocks at a 20-month low and the S&P 500 inching closer to ending the longest bull market ever. This month alone, the benchmark index has fallen nearly 15%. Still, Cornell Capital partner Ann Berry says the sell-off may be overdone, especially when it comes to big-name tech stocks.
I think there's not quite as much to justify the sell-off that we've seen. If you take an Amazon, for example, you still see Prime humming along at more than 100 million subscribers. You still see them really owning the e-commerce space. And nothing in that story seems to have changed to justify the stock price tank that we've seen in recent weeks.
Despite all that, the Dow Jones Industrial Average is poised for its worst December since 1931. And the S&P 500 is just 7 points away from entering a bear market.
Apple has been the biggest laggard in the Dow this quarter. The iPhone maker's stock is down 36% since its October high. And Technalysis Research President Bob O'Donnell says those struggles could continue in the new year.
I think actually 2019 could be tougher for Apple because they don't have anything coming in 2019 likely that's going to have a big impact. 2019 for smartphones gets interesting in two areas, 5G and foldable, that Apple is not going to be in.
Since crossing the $1 trillion mark in October, Apple has seen its market capitalization drop below $700 million and lost its mantle as the world's most valuable company.
Apple and its suppliers were among the many companies caught up in this year's U.S.-China trade dispute. And while 2018 was the year trade wars broke out, 2019 will likely be the year the global economy feels the pain. Former New York Fed President Bill Dudley sees the trade dispute as the biggest current risk to growth. He spoke exclusively with Bloomberg.
I think that U.S. can get something from China buying more U.S. stuff. They've already agreed to do that. I think that U.S. can get more access, better access to the Chinese markets. But if the U.S. wants China to fundamentally change its economic model and its industrial policy, that's where China's going to balk. And so really a question of how much is the U.S. going to push for.
The International Monetary Fund forecasts trade volumes will slow to 4% next year. That's down from 4.2% this year and 5.2% in 2017.
It was a volatile session in Asia today. Japanese stocks rose and fell throughout the session before a wave of late buying sent the Nikkei higher by 0.8%. China's Shanghai Composite fell 0.25%. South Korea's Kospi closed down 1.3%.
And Chinese authorities are studying plans to help banks replenish capital as they continue an attempt to crack down on financial risk without hurting credit growth. And Bloomberg News has learned the Bank of China plans to sell as much as $5.8 billion of perpetual bonds in what could be the nation's first ever issuance of such debt by a lender. Straight ahead, we bring you the latest world and national news. This is Bloomberg. And it's 5:07 on Wall Street. Michael Barr's here to tell us what's happening this day after Christmas. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Nathan. U.S. Customs and Border Protection says it is conducting new medical checks on every child in its custody after the second reported death of a minor this month. CBP said in a statement late last night that it is focusing its checks on children under the age of 10. An 8-year-old boy from Guatemala died early Christmas morning while in the agency's custody. Democrat Richard Blumenthal is a member of the Senate Judiciary Committee.
Tragedy knows no holiday. The top Trump administration officials who assured us that they were taking precautions must be held accountable.
Blumenthal says the committee is investigating health care provided by four young immigrants in government custody. President Donald Trump said that federal workers furloughed in a partial government shutdown support his effort to force Democrats to vote to spend billions of dollars for a wall on the Mexican border. The president told reporters at the White House yesterday the partial shutdown will remain until Democrats agree to wall off the U.S.-Mexico border.
I can't tell you when the government's going to be open. I can tell you it's not going to be open until we have a wall, a fence, whatever they'd like to call it. I'll call it whatever they want.
Meanwhile, the government shutdown doesn't mean an extended Christmas break for about 400,000 federal employees deemed essential. It means those workers need to be back on the job today, with no exceptions. Employees who aren't furloughed during a shutdown can't take any time off. It also means about half of the roughly 800,000 federal workers affected by the shutdown will work without pay. The Senate unanimously passed a bill that would retroactively pay workers once a spending deal is reached. The death toll continues to rise from last weekend's tsunami in Indonesia. At least 420 people were killed, and the volcano that caused the tsunami continues to erupt. The New York Police Department is investigating an officer who fired 27 shots along a busy Bronx street while chasing a fleeing suspect earlier this month. Fragments from one bullet wounded a 12-year-old girl in the leg. Another bullet struck a 46-year-old woman in the stomach. The suspect was wounded and eventually caught. An NYPD spokesman told the New York Times Officer Juan Gomez remains on active duty. Global News 24 hours a day on air and at TikTok on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Thank you, Michael. It's 5:09 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update. Here's Rob Buschka.
Good morning, Nathan. Giannis Antetokounmpo took the Knicks to task almost single-handedly at the Garden.
Bledsoe inside. Antetokounmpo down the lane, streaking to the rim for the two-handed flush. 28 now for the Greek Freak.
Knicks radio's Giannis scored 30 points, grabbed 14 boards. The Bucks pulled away for a 109-95 win. Knicks coach David Fizdale impressed with the man they call the Greek Freak.
The guy just puts constant pressure on you, and he always puts the official in a position to make a decision on if he's going to make a call because he's so aggressive. And it's just, you got to have multiple guys like Noah Vonleh to be able to even battle with them because, the guy's just such a physical beast.
New York has lost 10 of 11 and are 9-26. That was the first of five games as Houston got 41 from James Harden to edge the Thunder, 113-109. Kyrie Irving had 40 as the Celtics beat the Sixers at home in overtime, 121-114. LeBron James and the Lakers, they ran the Warriors out of the building in Oakland, 127-101. The story, though, was James left the game in the third with a strained groin.
See how I feel for the rest of the day today. I'm going to be all around the clock tomorrow. On rehabbing and we see what I don't even know what's today.
Tuesday.
So we see how I feel on Thursday when we go to Saturday.
No timetable in his return. He's played in 116 consecutive games. And the Blazers, Damian Lillard arrived in Utah carrying the leg lamp from A Christmas Story. Didn't help as Utah turned out the lights on Portland 117-96. And that's your NBC Bloomberg Sports Update. Nathan.
All right, Rob, thank you. Futures contracts point to some post-holiday buying to stay after Christmas, with S&P futures up 15 points, Dow futures up 119, NASDAQ futures up 32 points. 10-year Treasury yield 2.72%, the 2-year at 2.54%. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. Bloomberg Daybreak is brought to you by National Realty, NRIA. Developers of high-return income-producing properties for investor partners. See them at NRIA.net.
Global news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. Treasuries are edging higher alongside U.S. stock index futures as global investors wait to see if there'll be further turmoil in U.S. markets when traders return to their desks. Gold is adding to its stellar month, and the pound is rising. All major markets in Europe are closed today. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures up 12 points this morning. Dow futures up 99 and NASDAQ futures up 24. The 10-year Treasury of 4/32 yield 2.72%. Yield on the 2-year 2.54%. NYMEX crude oil up 1.3%, up 57 cents to $43.10 a barrel. COMEX gold is up 0.3% or $4 to $12.75.80 an ounce. The euro, $1.1387, and the yen, 110.55. And today we get a report on home prices from S&P CoreLogic Case Shiller out at 9 o'clock Wall Street time. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael, good morning.
Good morning, Karen. Customs and Border Protection officials say there will be an independent investigation after an 8-year-old Guatemalan boy died Christmas morning at a New Mexico hospital. Earlier this month, a 7-year-old Guatemalan girl died also in U.S. border custody. Christmas has come and gone, but the partial government shutdown continues. Today brings the first full business day after several government departments and agencies closed up over the weekend due to a budget stalemate between President Donald Trump and Congress. The president says that the partial shutdown will remain that way until Democrats agree to wall off the U.S.-Mexico border. In the NBA, the Knicks lost along with the Warriors. The Celtics won in overtime against the 76ers. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Thank you, Michael. It's 519 on Wall Street, live from the Bloomberg Interactive Broker Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak, and we're joined this morning after Christmas by Christina Hooper, Chief Global Strategist for Invesco. Hope you had a nice holiday, Christina. And as Karen mentioned, futures are pointing to a higher open this morning on Wall Street, but we were saying the same thing on Christmas Eve. And the Dow ended up ending the holiday shortened session 653 points lower. So is there any telling what the market will do today?
There is absolutely no telling what the market will do today. And that's largely because this is being driven not just by economic data. In fact, I would argue that the greater driver of this stock market downturn has been geopolitical events. For example, questioning Fed leadership, which is hard to predict. So we don't know where things will go today.
So you don't see this as driven just by, you know, so many of the other factors we've seen as the market's gone through all this volatility, everything from the trade dispute to questions about valuations of companies.
Well, definitely driven by the trade dispute as well, but those are the kinds of geopolitical risks that can't be controlled, and it's not as simple as just following economic data. But, of course, the economic data remains an issue. I believe we would see a more orderly market environment, though, if it was just about economic data.
Yeah, and, you know, the administration has tried to take steps to bring some order to the markets, and it seems like just about every step the administration tries to take, the markets just react really badly to it. I mean, is there anything Washington can do at this point to bring some calm to the markets?
I think Washington could back off, particularly when it comes to the Fed. If we go back and look at, for example, the 2011 market sell-off that summer came because of a downgrade in debt. And this was a time when, of course, there were a lot of concerns swirling around because we hadn't seen a downgrade. But stocks sold off. Interestingly, investors flocked to treasuries. And part of what soothed markets then, and really soothed markets throughout the global financial crisis, was the fact that we had an independent Fed that was also very supportive of markets. But keep in mind, we went through government shutdowns in the past, lots of geopolitical chaos in the United States, so to speak, but we never saw anything impact the Fed. In fact, the Fed became a very powerful fourth branch of government that was a lot more functional than the dysfunction we saw in Washington. Now, of course, that dysfunction has spread to the Fed, and I believe that that is going to be problematic going forward if we don't see Washington taking a step back and letting the Fed be the Fed.
So do you think the Fed being the Fed, are they being the Fed in the right way at this point in terms of moving ahead with rate hikes and the balance sheet unwind?
Well, it's not as supportive as markets would like to see it. But let's face it, the vast majority of market participants expected a rate hike in December. So that was not some kind of unorthodox or unexpected decision. However, the Fed could be more supportive when it comes to balance sheet normalization. It could recognize that there's a need for more flexibility with such a powerful tool, and that it doesn't necessarily or shouldn't necessarily be on autopilot. But hopefully the Fed will come to that decision on its own as opposed to feeling pressure from Washington, because I think that makes markets very uneasy.
Now, for now, of course, President Trump isn't backing off in terms of opining on the market. One thing that he has been saying is that with the markets down as low as they are at this point, that it's a buying opportunity. Do you agree with that?
I do believe it's a buying opportunity, but with the caveat that there's no reason why we won't see stocks go down in the shorter term. Just because, again, there is so much in the way of geopolitical events, headline news that aren't controllable. If, for example, the trade wars worsen, we could see stocks move lower. But for those with a long time horizon, this is definitely a time to start forming a wish list of what looks attractive, and certainly there are areas of the market that already look very, very attractive. It just means they could sell off even more before they move higher.
Christina Hooper, Chief Global Strategist at Invesco. Always good to get your insights. Thanks so much for being here this morning after Christmas on Bloomberg Daybreak, a morning that is pointing to a higher open on Wall Street with S&P futures up 12 points or 0.5%. Dow futures also 109 points higher. That's a 0.5% gain as well. NASDAQ futures up 24 points. That is a gain of 0.4%. Price of the 10-year Treasury up 4/32, the yield at 2.72%, 2-year Treasury yield 2.54%. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. It's 5:25 on Wall Street. For breaking news wherever you go, Bloomberg and Twitter bring you TikTok, the first global news network designed for social media. Live video coverage, hourly updated top news reports verified by Bloomberg at TICTOC.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York. Bloomberg 1130 to Washington, D.C. Bloomberg 991 to Boston. Bloomberg 1061 to San Francisco. Bloomberg 960 to the country. Sirius XM Channel 119 and around the globe. The Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
And it's 5:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm Karen Moscow.
I'm Nathan Hager. We're just about 4 hours away from the opening of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. U.S. stock futures, treasuries, oil, and gold are gaining as investors wait to see if there will be more turmoil in markets today. Japan's Nikkei finished the session higher by 0.8% after Monday's sell-off saw U.S. equity indexes slide nearly 3%.
That loss came following a failed attempt by Steven Mnuchin to calm markets. CNN reports President Trump's frustration with the Treasury Secretary is growing. At the same time, though, the president spent Christmas Day voicing confidence for Mnuchin, calling him a very talented, smart person.
The partial U.S. government shutdown enters its fifth day with no immediate end in sight. Lawmakers and the White House remain at odds over the president's demands for a border wall.
Brent crude slipped below $50 a barrel overnight for the first time since July of last year. Worries about U.S. oil supply are pushing against signs that OPEC may extend or deepen cuts in the new year. Checking prices right now, checking Brent first, it is up 1.4% at $51.18 a barrel. NYMEX crude oil is up 1.7% at $43.24.
In China, authorities are studying plans to help banks replenish capital as they continue an attempt to crack down on financial risk without hurting credit growth. And Bloomberg News has learned Bank of China plans to sell as much as $5.8 billion of perpetual bonds. That could be the nation's first ever issuance of such debt by a lender.
Here in the U.S., today's economic calendar features data on the housing market. Bloomberg's Vinnie Del Giudice reports.
At 9 a.m. Wall Street time, S&P CoreLogic will issue data on October home prices. They're still forecast to rise year over year, but the pace of price gains has been slowing, with September's increase the least in almost 2 years. Rising mortgage rates have tempered demand. The outlook for the new year is murky. Home builder confidence slipped this month to the lowest in 3 years. Vinnie Del Giudice, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, thank you, Vinny. Also on tap today, the Treasury sells $18 billion of 2-year floating rate notes and $41 billion of 5-year notes, Karen.
And futures are higher, Nathan. S&P futures up 16 points, Dow futures up 133, and NASDAQ futures up 33. The 10-year Treasury currently up 4/32, the yield 2.72%. The yield on the 2-year, 2.54%, and the 30-year yield is at 2.98%. COMEX gold also gaining up 0.3%, up $3.70 at $1,275.60 an ounce. Taking a look at currencies, the euro is at $1.1384. The British pound gaining against the dollar is at $1.2688, and the yen at 110.56. Straight ahead, the latest world and national news. And this is Bloomberg.
Thank you, Karen. It is 5:33 on Wall Street, and here to bring us the latest world and national news, Bloomberg's Michael Barr.
Thank you, Nathan. Some members of Congress say they're shocked at the death of a second migrant child in less than a month in U.S. Border Protection custody. U.S. border officials announced that an 8-year-old Guatemalan migrant boy died shortly after midnight Christmas morning at a New Mexico hospital. Democratic Senator Richard Blumenthal of Connecticut.
The Trump administration has to give us an explanation. They have to come back to the Judiciary Committee.
Border officials say it is conducting new medical checks on every child in its custody. Meanwhile, it is not the only case being investigated by outside organizations and immigration rights attorneys. Ruby Powers is an immigration attorney in Texas. Powers says she is representing a woman who was forced to go without much needed medical treatment.
So it doesn't seem to be this culture of we've got to take care of this person because there's this theory the person's not going to be here very long and they're going to be sent away. So why do we need to take care of them?
Border officials say the cause of the boy's death has not been determined. The partial government shutdown has now entered its fifth day. President Trump says it's up to Democrats to end the shutdown by building his border wall. As for how long the shutdown will last, the president told reporters at the White House, I can tell you it's not going to be open till we have a wall, a fence, whatever they want to call it. The president also says that federal workers furloughed in the shutdown support his effort.
It's going to all work out. But many of those workers have said to me and communicated, stay out until you get the funding for the wall. These federal workers want the wall.
However, two federal worker unions say their members aren't saying that. The unions say workers live paycheck to paycheck, and no one signed up for that uncertainty over paying their bills. The longtime secretary of disgraced financier Bernie Madoff is calling for an early release from prison in March. A lawyer for 70-year-old Annette Bongiorno says her advanced age entitles her to take advantage of a new prison reform law. Bongiorno has served about two-thirds of her six-year prison term. It is the day after Christmas, historically the busiest day for returns at stores. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air, and at TikTok on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Michael, thank you. It is 5:35 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update with Rob Buschka.
Good morning, Nathan. The Knicks kicked off a five-game feast on the hardwood with a 109-95 loss to the Bucks at Madison Square Garden. New York is 9-26. The losses are mounting up, and it's taking a toll, said Coach David Fizdale.
It's on me to stay even in this whole thing and not be up and down emotionally about it because I got to keep their spirits right. And, they feel it. It's not a – they're human. I don't want to stand up here and act like they're just brushing it off and getting on to the next day. They take it to heart with these losses. But again, I just got to get them back into the frame of mind that we got to get to work and get on to the next game.
Giannis Antetokounmpo had 30 points and 14 boards in the win as the Bucks won their first Christmas Day game in 41 years. The Knicks have lost 10 of 11. Most of the games were lopsided. In fact, all five being decided by an average of 15 points. James Harden needed all 41 as Houston held off OKC 113-109. Kyrie Irving had 40 family members on the pass list. Why not drop a point for each of them as the All-Star point guard finished with 40 as the Celtics beat the Sixers in overtime 121-114. LeBron James left the game in the third quarter at Golden State with a groin injury, but his Lakers still embarrassed the Warriors 127-101. LeBron will fly to L.A. Wednesday for an MRI. Utah got seven blocks from Rudy Gobert to clobber Portland 117-96. And in the NFL, what do you get the man who has everything for Christmas, like Steelers wide receiver Antonio Brown? A stuffed goat's head symbolizing the greatest of all time. And that's your NBC Bloomberg Sports Update. Nathan?
All righty then. Thank you, Rob. 5:37 on Wall Street. The latest edition of Bloomberg Business Week is on newsstands now. The cover is on the Dallas Mavericks' new CEO, how she's cleaning up two decades of toxic workplace culture. Also in this week's edition, how Amazon is building its very own FedEx. Spencer Soper wrote the story for Bloomberg Business Week.
Basically, what Amazon is doing is creating this network nationwide of independent couriers that are counting on Amazon packages to make money for their businesses.
Read more about how it works and see other stories in this week's edition of Bloomberg Business Week. Know what matters and why. Visit businessweek.com or pick up a copy of the magazine on newsstands now. And listen to Business Week with Carol Masser and Jason Kelly weekdays at 2 p.m. Wall Street time here on Bloomberg Radio. 5:38 on Wall Street, time for the Tri-State Business Report and Bloomberg's Ed Corey. Good morning, Ed.
Morning, Nathan. Well, 10 buyers spent a combined $500 million on their Manhattan apartments this year. The high point in the market, which this year was represented by a $74 million duplex penthouse in a new tower designed by Robert Stern, was down 26% from the 2014 high. New Jersey's boosted its reputation as one of the country's highest taxed states for 2018, raising rates on high income earners, businesses, and motorists, and posting among the nation's highest average property tax bills. But the Star Ledger reports some rates, like the estate and sales tax, declined. Hartford's Public Housing Agency has received a three-year U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development grant of $450,000. The money will help connect residents with jobs and educational opportunities. That's your Bloomberg Tri-State Business Report. I'm Ed Corey. Nathan?
Thank you, Ed. It's 5:39 on Wall Street, and Bloomberg Radio is on the air from San Francisco to New York, London to Hong Kong. Let's check in with our global news team for some of the top stories heard on our 300 affiliate radio stations around the world.
I'm Andrew O'Day on 1010 Winds in New York. I'm talking about the early returns on holiday season spending from MasterCard.
I'm Steve Potisk, and on KMOX in St. Louis, I'm reporting on Purina's charges that PetSmart's store brand cat litter packaging is too much like Purina's tidy cat packages.
I'm Sandra Kilhoff on Bloomberg DAB Digital Radio in London. We're reporting on a new government initiative that hopes to boost Britain's failing high streets.
I'm Ed Corey on KFBK in Sacramento. I'm reporting Wedbush says Apple investors will probably stay negative on Apple stock until first quarter results come out in January.
And those are some of the stories our 2,700 Bloomberg journalists and analysts are working on this morning around the world. The morning after the S&P 500 finished a shortened Christmas Eve session, 7 points away from a full-blown bear market. This morning, futures point to a higher open. S&P futures up 13 points or 0.6%. Dow futures up 112. That's a 0.5% gain. NASDAQ futures 27 points higher or 0.4%. Price of the 10-year treasury up 4/32. The yield at 2.72%. Two-year treasuries at 2.54%. NYMEX crude up 1.5%, trading at $43.18 a barrel. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. And it's coming up on 5:41 on Wall Street. Can Washington do anything to calm the markets? How long will the shutdown last? We'll speak with Terry Haynes of Evercore ISI straight ahead. This is Bloomberg.
Global news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. U.S. stock index futures are moving higher after a volatile start as investors assess comments from President Trump that he was confident in Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin and the U.S. economy, while the benchmark index sat at the edge of a bear market. All major markets in Europe are closed today. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures up 12 points, Dow futures up 103, NASDAQ futures up 22. The 10-year Treasury up 4/32, yield 2.72%, yield on the 2-year 2.54%. NYMEX crude oil up 1.4% or 62 cents to $43.15 a barrel. COMEX gold is up 0.33%, up $4.30 at $12.76.10 an ounce. The euro $1.1385 and the yen 110.55. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, U.S. immigration authorities say an 8-year-old boy from Guatemala has died in government custody. He is the second immigrant child to die in detention this month. A 7-year-old Guatemalan girl died after being apprehended by border agents earlier this month. Today is the first full business day of the partial government shutdown. So far, the public and federal workers have largely been spared inconvenience and hardship because the government is closed on weekends, and federal employees were excused from work on Christmas Eve and Christmas. President Trump says that the closed parts of the government will remain that way until Democrats agree to wall off the U.S.-Mexico border. In the NBA, the Knicks lost along with the Warriors. The Celtics won in overtime against the 76ers. Global news 24 hours a day on air and at TikTok on Twitter. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Michael, thank you. We are live from the Bloomberg Interactive Broker Studios, where it's coming up on 5:49 on Wall Street. And we're joined this morning after Christmas by Terry Haynes. He is the head of political analysis at Evercore ISI. Terry, the old song goes, there's no place like home for the holidays, but I guess we'll see whether that's the case for federal government workers affected by this partial shutdown.
I think so, yeah. I think unlike other shutdowns, stopped in the last, we had one in January, of course, that lasted barely the weekend, and before that only in 2013. But I think this is likely to be a little bit more protracted because there's no obvious way in which any of these sides might choose to back down, and you know that's a problem. So this might last a little while.
Although we did hear a few days ago from the acting White House Chief of Staff Mick Mulvaney that there might be some negotiating happening between the figures we've heard from both sides. President Trump calling for the $5+ billion for a wall, and Democrats saying they're sticking with nearly $1.4 billion for border security.
Yeah, there have been discussions going on for quite a while. You know, what I think is likely to happen here is that there may be a little bit more money for border security, and then at the same time, what you're likely to get is some reprogramming of existing funds, things that are monies that are already out there that can be essentially earmarked, although that's not technically the proper term, but earmarked directly for border security or wall construction. But, you know, as is normal in these sorts of shutdowns, this is a very big fight about very little in the end.
Big fight about very little. What does it tell us about the fights to come in 2019 when Democrats take control of the House, on Wednesday, right?
This next week, yes. Well, what it tells you about that is that, you know, both sides will continue to appeal to their bases. That heightens the appearance of conflict more than it does the actual conflicts, and the border wall is a perfect example of that. But what I've long thought for 2019 is that what you're going to get is, you know, aside from continued fiscal responsibility, the idea that we will continue to have funding for the government, and we've already got 75% of that for the full year, so for 2019, continued compromise budgets and that sort of thing, all that you're likely to see from Washington over the next 2 years is essentially a series of sugar highs for the market, moments where it seems like you're going to get some sort of an agreement on infrastructure funding or GSE reform or, you know, something like that in housing. And what happens after 3 or 4 days is it becomes apparent that there's not an agreement because there's no agreement on how to achieve anything. So in the end, there will be brief periods of euphoria followed by a crash. And anybody who's got children over the last couple of days can certainly sympathize and reflect on that because they know very well what a sugar high looks like.
Something like ongoing holiday spending for months on end.
Yeah, exactly. Just so.
So I wanted to ask you about the president's attempts to try to calm the markets. You know, he's been piling on the Fed for so many months now, it seems, and saying one thing on Twitter and then indicating something else when he actually speaks to reporters, and expressing at least some element of confidence in his Treasury secretary. Is that doing enough to calm the markets, do you think?
Probably not. People are very skittish for lots and lots of reasons, some of which have to do with political risk. There's an unusual confluence last week of a number of events that combined to elevate political risk. The shutdowns won. That in recent years has not had that much of an effect on markets, and that's probably true also all by itself. But then you have the situation with Defense Secretary Mattis leaving, a variety of other things that have combined, including the Fed criticism, that have combined to spook people a little bit. I'd suggest waiting and seeing on a lot of that. I think the Syria policy underneath the whatever personality conflicts were going on, the Syria policy is a little bit more complicated than people think. And what I've long said about the president and the Federal Reserve is that this is somebody who is criticizing the Fed precisely to I think, to make it clear that he doesn't have the ability to do anything about it, removing Chairman Powell or anything like that. That's well understood in the White House. And the issue here is that, he doesn't like the Fed policy, so he's criticizing the Fed policy.
Right.
But at the same time, if he was actually going to do something about it, he would have already done it.
Terry Haynes, head of political analysis at Evercore ISI. Thanks again for being with us this morning. Really appreciate it. Karen.
Now it's time for the Bloomberg Law Brief, exploring legal issues in the news. And today we discuss Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein, who's calling for the creation of a court to handle all immigration appeals. But legal scholars question the premise. For more on this story, Bloomberg's June Grosso speaks with Leon Fresco, a partner at Holland & Knight and former Deputy Assistant Attorney General for the U.S. Office of Immigration Litigation.
Leon, Rosenstein made this suggestion in an editorial in the Wall Street Journal. Tell us more about his complaint that the 12 federal appeals courts have created, quote, a hodgepodge of jurisprudence.
Sure. This is actually not a unique complaint, but it's a complaint that several conservative scholars have made, which is that because each circuit court of appeals only has jurisdiction over a few states, it shouldn't be the case that there's different immigration law in different states. And in fact, there are about 5 to 10 key areas of immigration law where, depending on where you live and where you were apprehended and placed into removal proceedings, you'll either win your case or lose your case because of where your case is being decided. And so his view is that all of those cases should be uniformly decided in one central court, just like the way patent law is, where there's one central court called the United States Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit.
Is immigration law any different from other areas of the law where differences or splits among the circuits are often what causes the Supreme Court to take a case?
Sure. The argument can be made both ways. One argument can be made that immigration is different because it's a uniquely federal priority and there shouldn't be different immigration laws in different states, given that foreign policy implications often take precedence in many of the things we're doing on immigration. So that would be one argument on the side of having a nationwide court. But the other argument would be, well, there's nothing different about immigration law as opposed to aviation law or tax law or bankruptcy law or any of these other laws that are nationwide laws that are applied all throughout the nation and are federal laws, but different circuits have different reads, and that is what leads to the Supreme Court taking decisions where there are these mixed circuits. So arguments can be made on both sides, and the argument that's prevailed right now is that there is nothing unique about immigration law when you compare it to these other kinds of laws.
And that's Leon Fresco, a partner at Holland & Knight and former Deputy Assistant Attorney General for the U.S. Office of Immigration Litigation, speaking with Bloomberg's June Grosso. You can listen to more legal analysis like this on Bloomberg Politics, Policy, Power, and Law, weekdays at 12 p.m. Wall Street time here on Bloomberg Radio. And find more legal news at BloombergLaw.com. Attorneys will find exceptional legal research and business development tools there as well. Visit BloombergLaw.com for more information. And futures this morning are higher, with S&P futures up about 11 points, Dow futures up 76, and NASDAQ futures up 20, and the 10-year Treasury up 4/32, yield 2.72%, and the yield on the 2-year 2.54%. And Bloomberg Daybreak continues. This is Bloomberg.